Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh, Benson's Victor Bring. Major League Baseball and all related things. Inside MLB. Inside MLB.
Good evening, Inside MLB fans. My name is Benson Fetcher, and I'll be your host tonight. It is Wednesday, July 6, 2016, and I hope you're having a fantastic week, and we are now getting over the hump. So without further ado, let's get started with what the main topic of the show was going to be about, and it is talking about the AL MVP, and who deservedly should the American League MVP so far? Who deserves the power, like, you know, the hardware of American League MVP award? And I know it might be a little bit hard to believe, but at the end of the day, I believe Texas Rangers outfielder Ian Desmond deserves the American League MVP award so far. And this might sound a little bit strange to you because he was a shortstop last year for the Washington Nationals, played middle infield, and he was expected to get a big deal this offseason. He waited, and he waited, and he waited, and nothing really happened, right? But at the end of the day, the Rangers, they did sign him 1 year, $8 million, and I thought it was a wonderful signing at the time. I thought he'd turn around his career there and be able to get a big contract next year. He's done exactly that, and it's truly an amazing feat. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a trivia thing. So last Friday, the Texas Rangers, they squeaked by the Twins 3-2 in 10 innings. A first-place team in the AL West, being the Rangers, beating a last-place team in the AL Central, the Twins. I mean, that's really not particularly interesting. But the interesting part is, I think, how the Rangers won that game. The game was knotted at 2-2 in the top of the 10th. When guess who came to the plate? Yes, Ian Desmond. He led off with a solo homer just to the right of dead center field. That big home run, it proved to be the difference and was just the latest example of Desmond coming up big when the Rangers had been in a difficult spot. And Desmond has been the problem solver so far for the Rangers. He's come through in every difficult spot that the Rangers have needed him to. And when you look at MVP, most valuable player, he has definitely been valuable to the Rangers, and he's definitely one of the reasons why he should be in the MVP talk, and if the season were to end today, why he should be taking home the hardware. Now, I'm going to go into some advanced statistics, get into all of that, because really, one plate appearance, it doesn't define a season. For any player, you know, a season consists of many hundreds of plate appearances along with at-bats, and you must be careful not to exaggerate when telling a story. Ian Desmond isn't the current American League MVP because he hit one home run. It's because of multiple home runs. It's because of multiple hits and big things. And he certainly is not because he hit one home run against a last-place team, the AL Central, the Minnesota Twins. Yet, for me, Desmond is the current AL MVP because of plate appearances like his homer against the Twins. It's just that simple. He has been proving that he can have those types of at-bats. And based on the overall context-free numbers, there's no arguing that Desmond has been a phenomenal player. There just isn't. When you fold in his situational hitting, however, his value is further revealed. Desmond is the biggest reason why the Rangers are where they are. And if you look at the Rangers, you know, offense, and you look at their lineup, you might not think Ian Desmond is the reason why they're in first place. But I'll tell you what, he definitely is the reason because of that. And we're going to look at some numbers to back that something up. And there really is something we should acknowledge. There's no award given for a league's first half MVP. So you never know. Ian Desmond could falter. And we'll have our overall MVP debates some months down the line. And between now and then, some players will get better and some players will get worse. It's just the nature of the game. Some players will get injured and taken out of the discussion, like Ian Desmond. It's a possibility. Nevertheless, we can have this conversation now. Let's say we want to identify the AL's current MVP. Where should we begin? it would make sense to me to go to Fangraphs brand wins above replacement, which is pretty much WAR based on Fangraphs. Baseball Reference has their own WAR. Fangraphs has their own WAR, but I personally like Fangraphs's. And if you go to that, you see that Ian Desmond is not at the top. Up ahead of Ian Desmond, you have four quality players: Mike Trout, Josh Donaldson, Jose Altuve, and Manny Machado. But the thing is, Mike Trout is only 1.2 wins above replacement ahead of Ian Desmond. And then you see how he is in fifth place, but he's actually tied there with Manny Machado. Both have four wins above replacement. And it definitely is a tight race for the Major League Baseball leaders. And what I find kind of stunning for WAR leaders in the Fangraphs category is that there are no National League players in the list. I mean, if you go down the list, you have Mike Trout, American League with the Angels. You have Josh Donaldson, American League with the Blue Jays. Jose Altuve, American League with the Astros. Manny Machado, American League with the Orioles. Ian Desmond, American League with the Rangers. Xander Bogaerts and David Ortiz, both with the Red Sox. Chris Sale with the White Sox. And Lindor and Quintana. Lindor on the Indians and Quintana on the White Sox. And when you look at that, there's no National League players, which is kind of stunning. And when I look at that, what I think is that the American League is definitely the hitters' league. That's where the hitters like to reside. And the National League, it's mostly pitching-based. And so that might factor into that. And WAR, you know, it's not the best at. It tries to consider as much as it can. It factors in hitting, base running, defense, position, and so on and so forth. You know WAR, and you know all these players. I mean, it's common use baseball knowledge in these days. I mean, every player on the list I just racked off, they've all been having wonderful seasons. And based on this and only this, the current MVP frontrunner will look to be, well, Mike Trout, because he's first. Donaldson would be a close behind, and Altuve is less close behind. Desmond is further away still. This, you know, WAR top 10 that I'm telling you about shouldn't be particularly shocking. You'd expect Mike Trout to be up there. You'd expect Josh Donaldson, Jose Altuve, those guys to be on the top of that list. But one thing that WAR doesn't consider, there is a loophole to it. However, it is context. This is by design. Players usually aren't solely responsible for the context of when and under what circumstance they get a chance to play. For example, you're not going to Mike Trout, for example, he bats in the three hole. He'll get more opportunities with base runners on base. Ian Desmond, he doesn't always have players on base, but he has come through with those players. And again, that just shows certain opportunities that are more important than others. And at bat in the ninth inning, you know, of a tie game is more important than an at bat in the sixth inning of a blowout. Everyone is able to, you know, feel that out. And we can actually put numbers to it. The specific number is actually called leverage index, which I'm going to refer to as LI from now on. A situation with an LI of 1 is of, you know, average importance. A situation with an LI of 2 is twice as important as usual. LI tells a story of the context. If you have two identical players, you'd rather have the one who did more of his hits in higher leverage spots. As a piece of info, LI is among the so-called win probability statistics. These are numbers based around the fact that we can estimate at any point in a game a team's chances of winning. So if you look at it, the higher the leverage, the greater the potential swing and win probability. And we can capture all those individual swings with something called win probability added, which is simply known as WPA. And I think WPA is a little bit better than WAR because it factors in the context of situations. So say we have a hitter who bats twice. The first time he improves his team's chances of winning by, let's say, 5%. The second time he improves those chances, let's double that, by 10%. That hitter would have a WPA of plus 15%, or you could use 0.15. It is, in a sense, the ultimate descriptive statistic, because all anyone cares about is winning, right? I mean, at the end of the day, what matters more? Winning, and this is what WPA brings to the table. So let me bring this all the way back. there's a reason I brought up WPA. It's important to know what WPA doesn't consider defense or position. So WAR has that value ahead of it. But unlike WAR, it's not a total value statistic. It does capture a lot of the value, though. And here's the present AL leaderboard. So these are the players that I'm about to rack off that have been coming through when it matters. And this is why Ian Desmond should be the American League MVP, because he is first on this list. Behind that is David Ortiz, and behind that is Mike Trout. Now that's pretty impressive. So you see Mike Trout, who is number one in WAR, is three in WPA. So when you put it in the context of situations, Ian Desmond has been more of a clutch hitter than Mike Trout. And when you look at valuable and most valuable player, because that's what I look at when I determine who I believe should be the most valuable player, what I see is value is coming through in the clutch situations. Mike Trout, he's been doing that at the third best rate in the American League. That's great. But two players have been doing it better. And the player that I want to focus on is Ian Desmond, because he was tied for fourth in WAR, and he's now number one in WPA. He has been the one that's coming through in the clutch situations. He has been bringing value to the Texas Rangers that is unparalleled. Behind that is David Ortiz, and I don't have him in my MVP discussion because I don't really like having DHs in there, because I don't even think the DH should exist in the first place. But an interesting tidbit, Josh Donaldson is actually ninth in WPA. He was second in WAR, ninth in WPA. And that just shows that WAR definitely does have a loophole in it. Again, that loophole is context of a situation. And Josh Donaldson has just not been able to come through at a higher clip than guys like Ian Desmond, David Ortiz, Mike Trout, Chris Davis. And you'll actually be surprised about this. Will Harris, Astros relief pitcher, he's actually been having a phenomenal season. He, him and Zach Britton, they are the relief pitchers who are leading the WPA board. They've been able to come through more in difficult situations than Josh Donaldson has. And if we're only using WPA, which wouldn't be used in the Baseball Writers Association of America, Will Harris and Zach Britton would actually be ahead of Josh Donaldson in MVP voting. And we all know Will Harris will not win the MVP award over Josh Donaldson, neither would Zach Britton. But the fact that it's there shows a lot in that those two relievers are having fantastic seasons. Then you have Xander Bogaerts, Chris Sale, Josh Donaldson, and Aaron Sanchez. So Ian Desmond, great season. He's been coming through when it matters. He's also been providing the wins above replacement, and he is just doing a lot of things here. And the reason why I brought up Will Harris and Zach Britton is because usually there's not relievers, and that really gets complicated. Thankfully, all we really care about here are, you know, the top two guys of Ian Desmond and David Ortiz. Based on hitting and some base running, this time considering context, Desmond has been enormously valuable. He was already great in terms of overall numbers, but he looks even better when you think about when he has done what he's done, and that's what I think matters and valuable. Desmond, he's also been a great defensive outfielder, first in left and then in center. You can really tell from watching that he has a shortstop's arm. Based on the numbers we have so far, Desmond has also been a quality base runner. It's the offense, though, that truly sets him apart. Recall that home run I was just talking about against the Twins. In what we term high leverage plate appearances, Desmond has been the best hitter in the league. His timing, in other words, has enhanced his value. One way of looking at this, I considered all of Desmond's events so far that have increased the Rangers' chance of winning a given game. On average, those situations have had leverage indexes of 1.15. Now, you remember me talking about the leverage index. So on average, when Desmond has helped his team at the plate, the situation has been 15% more than is typical. I also considered all of Desmond's events so far that have decreased the Rangers' chances of winning, because that's only fair. Those situations have had an average LI of 0.86. It's not that Desmond hasn't made big outs, it's that he has made relatively few of them. And what I think, Sue, is when there is a big situation in a game, for example, if you have bases loaded, bottom of the ninth, and you have a chance to win the game, Are you going to pop out or are you going to get a hit? Ian Desmond is going to get a hit in that situation where other players may not. Ian Desmond in that situation may make a big out earlier in the game, but when it's crunch time, I feel like Ian Desmond is just always coming through. As an alternative, though, you can look at Desmond's 30 most important plate appearances. 30, you know, it's an arbitrary number. We're just making that up right now. But anyway, these are the absolute biggest spots. In 20 of the 30 trips to the plate, Desmond has ultimately improved the Rangers' win probability. He has batted 12 for 25 with 4 home runs, 4 walks, and 1 hit by pitch. Desmond hasn't been responsible for ending up in big spots, but he does deserve credit for when he has come through. That part has been up to him. And some people may, you know, go at him and say he is not putting the runners on base, he's just getting them in. And RBI may be a little bit skewed of a number, but it's not. When he's in the big situations, he's able to come through, and that's what's important. 12 for 25, 4 home runs. He's been amazing in the crunch, and he's just proven that game in and game out. It is possible to go beyond just the bat, though. And Desmond hasn't just been timely in the box, even though that's mostly what goes into WPA, which is my preferred statistic. As things stand, Desmond ranks second in the majors in high leverage stolen bases without being caught once. Steals do go into WPA, but defense doesn't. And out of Desmond's 6 outfield assists, 1 came in a tie, 2 came in a 1-run games, and 2 came in 2-run games, and 1 came in a 3-run game. 3 of these assists were outs made at home plate, and if they're all in those close of games, that proves that he has been a great fielder. For example, one of those, I don't know if I didn't look into that, but the one that came into a tie, if he's thrown that out of the plate, that's given the Rangers another chance to win the game, possibly. And he has just been ultimately valuable for the Rangers that you cannot quantify. We're going to take a quick break on Inside MLB, but when we come back, we're going to finish up our Ian Desmond MVP talk and why ultimately he deserves the award if the season were to end today. We'll be back on Inside MLB in 30 seconds. We're back on Inside MLB, and we've been talking about why Ian Desmond deserves, in my opinion, to be the American League MVP award so far in the first half of the season. And we were talking about WPA and how it is a context statistic compared to WAR, and how I personally like WPA a little bit more. Now, I'm going to go a little bit into the history of Banks with the Washington Nationals. And historically, really, Desmond, he has not been a particularly clutch baseball player. This gets at the difference between projecting future value and assessing past value. For the future, let's be honest, we shouldn't expect Desmond to keep performing so well in the biggest spots, at the plate, on the bases, or with his arm in the field. That's not who he always is. But it is who he has been for a few months this season. This isn't a criticism. It's just the way things go. Yet, let's step back and consider all this. Just take a breather for a second. Desmond, he signed with the Rangers at the end of February, and spring training was already underway. He was a shortstop who signed up to be an outfielder, and the chance came only because Josh Hamilton was hurt. Desmond wasn't an obvious fit at first, and it felt like 2015 had completely tanked his value. It was almost a worst-case scenario for free agency. But then we got to watch as Desmond owned left field. Then he made a seamless transition to cover center for struggling Delino DeShields. He has played in almost every game, and he has had a positive effect in almost every area. Based on the overall numbers, Desmond has been one of the most valuable players in his league. Based on the situational numbers, Desmond has been the most valuable player in his league. The season, it's half over, okay? But the Rangers are sitting in a wonderful spot. To a great extent, they had Ian Desmond to thank. And you may go into this history, Banks, and you may see that he's not been a great player. And there is reason to think that he might not keep up his first half statistics. It's just not who he is. But I think the situation that he came into, is really great. And he, in my mind, along with MVP, he has to be Comeback Player of the Year award too, because he is just a slam dunk for that award, because we're talking about MVP as well. And he is going to get a big deal next year if he continues his stats. And, you know, the Rangers, they gave him a chance. He has come through with his chance, and he should thank the Rangers, and the Rangers obviously should thank him. And it could be a special Rangers season. It really could. And let's see how they do the rest of the year, and let's see how Ian Desmond does the rest of the year. And they will be talking about him for real in MVP discussions later on in the year when we do our MVP debates. So that's that for the Ian Desmond talk. I hope you enjoy it. But now it's time to flip the switch, and we're going to the National League, and we're going to a pitcher. And that pitcher is Matt Harvey, and how actually this is happening relatively breaking news. Matt Harvey is going on the DL with right shoulder discomfort. And so just to give you a brief rundown, the New York Mets, he's a right-hander, Matt Harvey, been placed on the disabled list with right shoulder discomfort, has been dispatched to a St. Louis-based doctor who specializes in thoracic outlet syndrome and other blood flow ailments. So Matt Harvey, he's had a bit of a comeback since he started doing bad at the beginning of the year, but he's relatively come back and he's been okay. And the Mets announced, which could be detrimental, that Harvey was seen by team doctors who recommended an examination with Dr. Robert Thompson. Thompson is affiliated with the Washington University School of Medicine. He will evaluate Harvey on Thursday. Watkins, he also, he has a bit of a close relationship with the Mets. He performed season-ending surgery on Mets right-hander Dylan Gee in July 2012 to repair a damaged shoulder that had resulted in a 96% blockage of an artery and a near full loss of feeling in G's arm. So obviously this Dr. Watkins is a great doctor. Logan Verrett is likely to take Harvey's originally scheduled start Saturday against the Washington Nationals. The Mets will promote right-hander Seth Lugo from AAA Las Vegas to take Harvey's roster spot. This is his second season back from Tommy John surgery. He has not really been good this year. He sort of had a little bit of a bounce back. He's 4-10 with a 4.86 ERA and 17 starts. He allowed 6 runs, 5 of them earned, on 11 hits in 3 2/3 innings against the Marlins on Monday. And Harvey is an interesting case. And I think, honestly, players, they go through their ups and downs. And unfortunately, this year might be for Harvey been more downs than there are ups, and obviously this is one of the downs that Harvey's experiencing. After a bad start, he's now on the DL, and he's now going to this doctor, and he might need surgery. And beyond the statistics, it's been a rough year medically for Harvey too. He dealt with what he described as a urinary tract infection during spring training, which led to a blood clot in his bladder and hampered his preparation for the season. Now people were talking about, might that have affected the beginning of the season? And statistically, medically speaking, it's just all been bad. And when we think about the Mets, we think of, you know, how they're deep in starting pitching, but you can never be too deep. And we think of them as a deep team, but they are now a lot thinner at the position without Harvey. Zach Wheeler, who was originally supposed to return from Tommy John in early July, now is looking at a mid-August return at best because of setbacks. Steven Matz and Noah Syndergaard, they're both pitching through bone spurs in their pitching elbows. Matz will have to need the spur surgically removed, although team officials are hoping to delay the procedure until after the season. And it's just not been good. The offense hasn't been there. Jose Reyes, I believe they won today. He led off and played third, and nobody expected that at the beginning of the season. Medically, it's not been a good year. Offensively, it's not been a good year. And pitching is supposed to be their stronghold, and it's just not been there for the Mets so far. And Steven Matz and Noah Syndergaard, those bone spurs, it's going to be hard for them to pitch through the remainder of the season. And then they're going to have surgery, hopefully for the team and hopefully for them in Major League Baseball after the season. But you never know how they're going to be with those burn spurs. bone spurs, and you never know how they're going to be in 2017 with those. Zach Wheeler, you also don't know. It's a toss-up how good he's going to be when he maybe gets back in mid-August. He might not even back until September. So you see this team is in trouble pitching-wise. And if you look at it, Bartolo Colon at 43 years of age, he's their ace right now. And we definitely were not thinking about that at the beginning of the year. But Bartolo Colon, he stepped up, and the Mets need him to continue to step up. And Logan Verrett, he's going to have to take on a big role too, because pitchers are not medically sound right now. So Logan Verrett, Bartolo Colon, they're going to need to figure things out. And hopefully for the Mets, this meeting with Dr. Robert Thompson at the Washington University School of Medicine goes well. And if it doesn't, it could be bad news for the Mets for the long term and for the short term, who are have that second wild card spot right now, but it might not be there for long if they continue to have these medical problems. I want the Mets to do well. Injuries always happen. It's a given, but we never would have thought it would have gotten this far for the New York Mets. All right, let's move into our next topic after doing a little bit of medical examination, if you will, on the New York Mets. And our next topic on the show, we're going to get into more depth after a quick break in 5 minutes, but we are going to be talking about Dodgers ace Clayton Kershaw and how he was cleared to throw today. And Dave Roberts, it was a pleasant surprise for him, pleasant surprise for all baseball fans, because you always want Clayton Kershaw out there on the mound. He's a fantastic player. He invigorates fans. Fans sell out Dodger Stadium every game for him. And I think it is just great that he has been cleared to play catch as he rehabilitates from mild disc herniation. Manager Dave Roberts said today that Kershaw's been exercising and his latest clearance is exciting and encouraging. But Roberts says the team will keep a close eye on Kershaw because he'll want to push it as much as he possibly can. Kershaw, he went on the disabled list on Friday, ensuring that he'll miss next week's All-Star game in San Diego, which we'd love to see Clayton Kershaw perform there, but we don't want to see him injured. Right now, amazing numbers so far. He's 11-2 with a major league leading 1.79 ERA in 16 starts. He is second in the majors with 145 strikeouts. This is only his second stint on the DL in his career. And I think Dave Roberts obviously needs to keep a close eye on Kershaw because you don't want him to push it that much. They are not in a good position standings-wise. They are trying to catch the Giants, but you don't want possibly the best pitcher of all time to be hurt long-term. You don't want him to be hurt short-term, but you don't want this to be a prolonged injury thing. So have him play catch, but you don't want him to push it. Pushing it would be the worst possible thing for the Dodgers right now. They need to just relax a little bit with Kershaw, make sure he's 100% healthy before throwing him back into action. You don't want to play a star like this who has been fantastic for the Dodgers year in and year out and just continues to get better over his career. You don't want a guy like that to have a nagging injury like this in his career. So that could be bad for the Dodgers. We don't want that happening. And a little bit of Dodgers news right now. They're tied with the Orioles in the top of the eighth. Baltimore's up to bat. They have a man on first with two gone. But the Dodgers, they just need to play the safe and make sure that Clayton Kershaw is 100% healthy before getting him back. Because I know the fans love him. I know they're going to want to push it. He's going to want to push it. But Dave Roberts, he just needs to be the mediator. He needs to be the bad guy, so to speak. And he just needs to calm down Clayton Kershaw. My bad. The Orioles and the Dodgers are in the bottom of the 10th. My scoreboard app, I guess, is a little bit slow. So my bad on that one. But we need to take a quick break on Inside MLB. It'll be 30 seconds. When I come back, we're going to be talking about what the Cubs' focus for Fowler is, and that really has helped over the All-Star game, so he will not be playing, participating in that event. We'll be back on Inside MLB in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
We've had a great show so far, a lot of topics, and I loved getting into that. But I'm talking about some injury problems with Dodgers ace Clayton Kershaw. Encouraging news for him, actually. He was cleared to play catch today. And bad news for the Mets is Matt Harvey will be missing some time on the DL, and he will be reexamined with a St. Louis-based doctor coming up. But now it's time to move to the Cubs and another health issue. And he, Dexter Fowler, he's on his first All-Star game. But, you know, the ultimate goal is health. He wants to stay on the field. And while the Chicago Cubs and everybody, baseball fans, obviously, they voted him in. They hope injured outfielder Dexter Fowler can play in his first All-Star game next week. Their bigger concern, though, is getting him healthy for the second half of the season. Fowler, he has been out of the lineup since injuring his right hamstring on June 18th. You know, if I'm Dexter Fowler, I want to play in the All-Star game, and I have to think of my health. I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go to the All-Star game, and, you know, he's probably all for it. I think he should really see how, you know, he plays out for the rest of the weekend. But I think the concern for him is how he plays for the Cubs the rest of the year. Joe Maddon, obviously, and Theo Epstein and the Cubs, they do not want him injured for the rest of the year. The All-Star game is great. He might not even get back there the rest of his career. But the ultimate goal for him is how he plays for the Cubs the rest of the year. And I guarantee you, Dexter Fowler would rather win a World Series with the Cubs than play in the All-Star game, get injured, and then not be with the Cubs because of that. And maybe cause the Cubs not to get that far. So you don't want that to ever happen. And he was eligible to come off the disabled list this Monday, but wasn't deemed ready on Tuesday. He was selected to start his first All-Star game, which will come on in 6 days, July 12th. The plan, according to Joe Maddon right now, is for Fowler to play a couple days in the minors later this week, then play in the All-Star game and be activated after the break. If he can't go on a rehab assignment by the weekend, then he would probably miss the All-Star game. Maddon wants him to play in the All-Star game, but health is the ultimate concern. If he doesn't do well in the minors, then that obviously might not be able to play in the All-Star game. If something that gets aggravated in the minors, he will not be able to play in the All-Star game. So that's really that with that. And Joe Maddon, I think it's nice to have a potential plan in regards to when he'll be available. He's saying that they'll know by tomorrow or Friday. The next 2 days will tell if he can participate or not. I think they should really just see, you know, how the leg reacts, how he does in the minors, when he comes back with them. And if it doesn't work out, play it safe, and let's do that. Maddon, he didn't rule anything out, including Fowler could possibly play this weekend for the Cubs in Pittsburgh, though that's doubtful. The Cubs are 6-11 since Fowler was injured, and that's just showing how valuable a top of the lineup he is to the Cubs. And I think, I'm a Pirates fan. I don't really want him to be back this weekend against the Pirates. I do want to see him play in the All-Star game, but could you just, wait until the All-Star game to be back, and then we'll see what happens. At least wait until the Sunday game. Another big Pirates news, I'm not going to get into much, but Tyler Glasnow, promoted from AAA, will be making his Major League debut tomorrow. And I think this influx of talent from AAA, it's really been nice. You guys, Jameson Taillon, Chad Cole, Stephen Brault making his debut yesterday, because Taillon was actually sent to the DL, and now Glasnow will be starting tomorrow. And Locke and Liriano, they you call them the older guys now. Liriano's a little bit older. But Locke probably be called the ace of the rotation for the Pirates right now. I know it's kind of crazy, but he has been pitching fantastic. And we'll see how Tyler Glasnow does tomorrow. And that's just my bit of Pirates info for you right now. We might get into a little bit later. We'll see how everything goes. That's in my backup information. So beyond Cubs and Dexter Fowler, we have more disabled list information. And I feel like this time of the year, it's just all about the disabled list because players, a lot of teams, they hobble to the All-Star break. And the All-Star break is definitely a time for people to rest, for players to, you know, get back to the form for the second half of the season. And another player who will be trying to do that and will be put on the DL is Taiwan Walker. He has foot tendonitis with the Seattle Mariners. So let's get into a little bit of that right now. And again, more health problems, and that's just how it goes this time of the year. And let's get into it with Mariners starting pitcher Taiwan Walker on the DL with right foot tendonitis. It's only the 15-day DL. The move comes the day after Walker left a start early for the third time this season because of a foot problem. Walker, he's not having that great of a season if you look at his records. He's 4-7. He yielded 5 hits and 5 runs to the Houston Astros before leaving after 4 innings with discomfort in his right foot. He also left early because of his foot on June 14th and June 19th. And if they're going to put him on the sale list, it's probably the best time of the year to do that because he will have the whole All-Star break to recover, and hopefully he will be ready to go a couple weeks maybe after the All-Star break. So we'll see how that goes. And obviously with Taiwan Walker, something still isn't quite right. You know, he struggled. He's trying to pitch through it, but the Mariners probably have to reevaluate where they are. Because you can't have him keep coming out of the game because of his foot. This is the third occurrence. And if this keeps happening, then you just got to put him on the DL sometimes. I know he struggled through it. I know you tried to pitch through it. But sometimes you got to let the player go. You have to put him on the disabled list because you don't want an injured player trying to fight through something and aggravate something else. Because when that happens, it's often not good. It could be long-term damage. You don't want that. Hopefully this foot tendonitis thing clears up and he'll be ready to go. Walker, he definitely is frustrated that this issue has lingered for so long. You would be frustrated. He tried to pitch through it, thought it would go away, and, you know, he just hasn't really been having his best stuff. It looks like his velocity is down. When I was watching him, it didn't look like his changeup was as sharp, and didn't really look like, you know, nothing was really as sharp because it doesn't look like he can get his legs into it, and he can't get after it. I think it's really probably not the best for him to go out there and pitch because he can't give it 100%. Players always want to give all they can give, and if they can't give all they can give, then you just have to take a step back, get better, then give all you can give. In the game yesterday, they lost to the Astros 5-2. And when I was watching the game, the highlights of it, the first two innings, he was really good. You know, he was able to drive. After the second inning, though, you know, it looked like he didn't really have the legs. Everything was up. He wasn't finishing because you can't get the leg down. I've experienced from being a pitcher myself. You want to have those long strides. You want to get that foot down because when you're doing that, you can throw over the top. And when you throw over the top, that's when you're good. I know when you mess up, though, your foot's not all the way down when you're throwing. And if your stride's not long enough, a lot of times will mess up because your arm is lagging behind, and that's often when you tend to mess up because you're not going to wait that long to release the ball. So the fact that you couldn't drive it in there, it makes sense. And if your foot is hurt like that, it's hard to move it. So I understand why everything is messing up, and it made sense to take him out at that point in the game. And if you're not able to get that long start, if you're not able to get that foot down before releasing, problems can occur, and hopefully he will be able to work that out and be back because he is a dynamic young talent, and 4-7 has not been great, and the injury over the season, it makes sense because you don't know how long it was lingering before June 14th when he was first taken out. So hopefully we'll see Taiwan Walker back in action as soon as possible because, again, dynamic young talents, you always want to see them on the field. And this All-Star break, it's definitely going to be a healing process, and it's good. It definitely is good. And we always have to talk about Pete Rose. He always comes up sometime in the season, and, you know, when he's brought up, we got to talk about it. And he is filing a federal defamation lawsuit against John Dowd. And I will get into the story now, probably finish it after our last break. So, P. Rose, he filed a federal defamation lawsuit today against John Dowd, who, kind of funny, he actually oversaw the investigation that led to Rose's ban from baseball for claims Dowd made last summer that Rose had underage girls delivered to him at spring training, and it's sad, never want to really talk about it, but that he committed statutory rape. The complaint was filed today in U.S. District Court in Pennsylvania. It cites a radio interview last summer with a station in Westchester, Pennsylvania, which is just outside of Philadelphia, in which Dowd said, Michael Bertolini, you know, told us that he not only ran bets, but ran young girls down spring training, ages 12 to 14. Isn't that lovely? So that's statutory rape every time you do that. It's a sad story. I don't really like talking about it. Nobody really likes talking about it. And the guy, Bertolini, you were he mentioned, was a memorabilia merchant whose taped conversations and other information about Rose's gambling were central to Rose receiving a permanent ban in 1989. He's tried to reinstate himself, but this obviously is not going to help his cause at all. And he might land himself in jail, which if he did this, he obviously deserves the punishment. If he didn't do this, then that's that. Obviously, Rose does not believe he did this because that's why he's filing the lawsuit. And in the lawsuit, it also cites an interview with CBS Radio in which Dowd said he has Bertolini running young woman down for his satisfaction. So you know he's just not worthy of consideration or to be part of the game. This is not what we want to be in the game of baseball. And I understand that. Rose, according to Rob Manfred, was not a changed man at all. And obviously this now coming up, and Rose, he did deny Dowd's accusations. Bertolini, the memorabilia merchant, he has never made such claims. Former Commissioner Faye Vincent, who was deputy commissioner at the time of Rose's ban, has said that he did not remember such allegations. So it's sort of a gray area of what really happened here and what really didn't happen. Obviously, John Dowd believes it did happen. Obviously, Pete Rose doesn't believe it happened. So whose integrity do we trust? Do we trust Pete Rose, who is banned from baseball, or do we trust John Dowd, who, you know, helped a gambler get out of our game? So, I mean, I don't really like to pick sides in stuff like this. Obviously, we think innocent until proven guilty. We all have our own opinions. I'm just going to really leave it at that because it's just such a touchy subject. And so with Pete Rose and this whole thing, the suit, it also disputes Dowd's claim that Rose bet against the Reds, for whom he played and managed. It notes that while the Dowd report expresses stately that no evidence was discovered that Rose bet against the Cincinnati Reds, Dowd told the New York Post in 2002 that he had reliable evidence that Rose did bet against his team. According to the filing, these direct contradictions by Dowd on the very same subject matter are evidence that Dowd would lie when his personal animus toward Rose overcame him. Dowd's statement that he had reliable evidence that Rose bet against the Reds was maliciously false and reckless and intended to harm Rose. So then you see John Dowd and how he's lied over the years, and Pete Rose, how he's lied over the years. And then you just get into a lying game, and ultimately it's going to be the judge's decision about what happened here. And at the time of these interviews last summer, Commissioner Rob Manfred was actually considering Rose's request for reinstatement. Dowd had appeared on the shows to discuss that topic and to talk about whether Rose should be eligible for the Hall of Fame. Manfred ultimately, as everybody knows, denied Rose's request. According to the suit, ever since Dowd investigated Rose in 1989 and Rose was placed on the ineligible list, Dowd actively sought to prevent Rose from ever being reinstated by MLB or elected to the Hall of Fame, and he ultimately made maliciously false and reckless claims against Rose. Dowd, he's relatively old, he's 75. He was a longtime partner in the Washington law firm of akin Gump, Strauss, Howard, and Feld, had no comment when was contacted. Rose is represented by First Amendment lawyer Martin Garbus, who has represented Nelson Mandela, Cesar Chavez, Lenny Bruce, and Don Imus, among others. So he does have a good lawyer. At least that's going for him. The suit does not specify damages except to say that the amount exceeds the jurisdictional minimum of $75,000. It maintains that Rose at least two commercial endorsements because of the claims. So we'll see. Pete Rose or John Dowd. I mean, everybody has their own opinion, so we'll leave it at that. And we're going to take a quick break on Insanity. We'll be our last break. The show's been flying along. But when we come back, we're going to be actually talking about Tyler Glasnow and how he was recalled from AAA and will be making his Major League debut tomorrow. That's next. We're back on Inside MLB, and it's now time to get some good news for the maybe the first time today besides Desmond talk, and that is Tyler Glasnow of the Pittsburgh Pirates and how he will be making his Major League debut tomorrow, and very exciting. I'm a Pirates fan. I'm excited to see everybody making their debuts. It's been exciting for me. So another young pitcher for the Pirates will be coming up. And this is very exciting. Buster only reported that the Pirates are promoting top pitching prospect Tyler Glasnow. Glasnow will start tomorrow against St. Louis Cardinals in St. Louis. He has had absolutely fantastic numbers through 96 innings in the minors this season. He's only 22 years old. He's had a 1.78 ERA, and he throws a fastball that tops out at 99 miles per hour and also has a curveball and a changeup. He is number 6 on ESPN's Keith Law's list of top 50 prospects. He's number 14 with Baseball America, and he is just exciting. 6'9", absolutely a huge pitcher, and he's topping out 99. His curveball, I heard, is amazing, along with his changeup. The only problems he has been having, though, are walks. And watching the Pirate games and Pirate pregames, what I've been hearing about Tyler Glasnow is that he has been walking a lot of people, and he's able to get out of those jams in AAA because, you know, AAA batters, they're not the same as Major League Baseball batters. So tomorrow, I think the key for him is location. If he can get his fastball going and his curveball going, he'll be devastating. If he can't locate his fastball, then nothing happens after that. I think he should go out there free and easy tomorrow. If you try to overthrow again, pitchers do that in their debut. They tend to do that. I don't want to see him overthrow tomorrow because if that happens, he might be trying to hit 100. You never know. And impress, I guess, the St. Louis fans, it won't be good. But if he can, you know, go out there free and easy, not try to overthrow, spot his fastball, effective curveball, and use his changeup in wide situations, he'll be great. He definitely will be great, and I'm definitely very excited to see him. And the rotation is going to be exciting now. You get Gerrit Cole when he gets back, Tyler Glasnow, Jameson Taillon, Chad Kuhl, he's been great, and Stephen Brawley's not going to be a part of the rotation, but Chad Kuhl will probably be kicked out of that too. But Jameson Taillon, he's on the DL, so it'll be Glasnow, Kuhl, Liriano, Locke, and Brault until one of these guys come back. And now that Glasnow's part of the rotation, I'm very excited. Cole will probably be the first back, so after the All-Star break. He might actually pitch Sunday is what I'm being told. The rotation will probably look like Cole, Glasnow, Locke, Liriano, and Cole. So once Taillon gets back, Taillon will fill in for Cole. But it's definitely going to be a young, exciting rotation. And Cole, when he's on, he can be one of the best pitchers in baseball. Liriano, he sort of prides himself on getting swings out of the strike zone. He is an amazing pitcher. His slider is devastating. And when he's getting swings and misses out of the strike zone, that's when he is great. That's when he has proven that he can be great. When he's doing that, he's fantastic. Jeff Locke has had a great year this season. The ERA is deceptive. He has had 4 bad starts this season. In those 4 starts, he has allowed 32 runs, about 8 runs per game. In all his other starts, he has only allowed 31 runs. Now that's just showing something. If you take away those 32 runs in those four games, his numbers are probably a lot different. June 9th, when the Pirates had a makeup game against Colorado, 11 runs, 11 earned runs. They had to keep him in that game, though, because the bullpen was taxed. He was sort of doing a courtesy to the Pirates. Jeff Locke, he believes in himself. He is a great pitcher when he is hitting his spots, and that was proven, I think, the most when the Pirates won 10-0 May 31st in Miami. First complete game of his career, and he almost faced the minimum. I forget who broke it up. Can check in on my scorecards right here. But I know it was a pinch hitter in the bottom of the ninth. 26 batters through. He almost did it, but just came up short. Pulling up the scorecard right now. And the guy that ended it was actually, my bad, one game back. Here it is. It was Johnson of the Marlins. He had a double. So he broke that up. Obviously a tough luck for Jeff Locke. But with that, that's how it ended. I said Johnson. It was actually Jeff Mathis. He had a single. He broke up Locke's complete game facing the minimum. He had a great start, and he has had great starts since then, except June 9th was definitely a hiccup. He's been fantastic at home, and he proved in his last start he can be great on the road. And believe it or not, he held to one of the best lefties in all of baseball. Madison Bumgarner beat him 1-0. Eric Kratz hit a home run over the left field wall where Angel Pagan just missed it. But Jeff Locke, he has proven he can be great. And the bullpen is coming along for the Pirates. They have been throwing scoreless inning after scoreless inning. Mark Melanson going to his third straight All-Star game. Tony Watson, he had a rough start to the season, but he's been great. Neftali Feliz, a great pickup by the Pirates. They've turned around. Ray Searage, another great job. And Watson, Melanson, Feliz, they've been great. But you might not know the next guy I'm going to say. A.J. Shugel. He's also been fantastic. He has come in high-leverage situations. He can pitch multiple innings, and he's actually had a save this season in Colorado. So he has been fantastic for the Pirates. And if A.J. Shugel can continue his success, Neftali Feliz keeps it up, and he's been definitely the cornerstone behind Melanson, I think, this year. It'll be great. Arquímedes Caminero is an interesting case, too. Arky Caminero, he had a rough start to the season, went on the DL, and ever since he's came back, he's been able to find his command. He can throw the ball 100 miles per hour, has a devastating slider, and his changeup is great, too. If he's on, he can be a definite weapon. And then Juan Nicasio, he was put back in the bullpen. He was demoted after he went back home for personal matters. So now that he's in the bullpen, he can pitch multiple innings, and he is a great long relief pitcher with the Dodgers last year, great reliever, and he can be special out of the bullpen too. Now that the Pirates have their bullpen, the offense has proven to be clicking at times, and the offense, I like it a lot. John Jaso, he has been fantastic for the Pirates, a great signing, and he wanted to come to the National League because he was not going to be a catcher because of concussion issues that sort of derailed his career. So he became a designated hitter. And he said, the DH, it's not real baseball. You're just sitting on the bench. So he decided to become a first baseman, came to Pittsburgh, and he has been great. Now, one of the interesting things with John Jaso, actually, people have been shifting on him a lot. I don't know why, because what I've seen from him is he's able to spray the ball all over the field. He's come up with clutch hits time and time again. And even though he is more of a platoon guy, he has still been great. Another great bench player, actually the first great bench player I'm mentioning, Sean Rodriguez. He re-signed with the Pirates in the offseason. Did not have a good year last year, but he has definitely come into his own this year. He can play all over the field. He's mainly been coming in late to play first base for John Jaso defensively, but he's also played when left-handers have pitched too. Sean Rodriguez has been great.
one of the more defining moments of Sean Rodriguez's season to me. When they were in San Diego, he hit a ball over whatever the building is out there. He hit it over that. That was definitely very impressive. Then Gregory Polanco, he was really snubbed from the All-Star game. And one of the snubs from that All-Star game, I think Odubel Herrera definitely did not deserve an All-Star game pick. Gregory Polanco, Starlin Marte should be in the All-Star game. Starlin Marte should win the whatever the last vote thing is. I know Brandon Belt is in first right now. Marte close behind him. So please actually do that voting right now. I actually have the phone number that you can text it to. Trying to pull it up. All right, here it is. If you want Starlin Marte to still be in the All-Star game, which he should be, Odubel Herrera should not be, then you should text 89269. Again, 89269. And then N4. That'll get Starlin Marte, hopefully, the votes he needs to get into the All-Star game. Again, 89269. And then N4. And you will get a response that says you voted for Starlin Marte in the 2016 Eastern's All-Star game final vote. He deserves to be an All-Star. Odubel Herrera does not. Gregory Polanco also deserves to be an All-Star. I know Polanco's a little bit hurt right now, has a bit of a hammy problem, but Marte definitely deserves to be in. He has a super high batting average. He is going to get, I think, 40-plus stolen bases, and he is a great base stealer, great hitter. He can hit for power. He can beat out infield singles. He deserves to be an All-Star. I don't think Odubel Herrera does either. And some other snubs real quick. Eduardo Nunez, he does not deserve to be in the All-Star game in my mind. Alex Colom does not deserve to be on the All-Star game. I don't know if the representative per team should even be there anymore because you're taking Aroldis Chapman out of the All-Star game for an emergency catcher and Alex Colom, who probably would have finished like 18th on your preseason list of most likely raised pitchers to make the All-Star team. Aroldis Chapman deserves to be in. Let me think of who else deserves to be in. Carlos Correa, I think he was maybe the biggest snub of all. They put Eduardo Nunez in over Carlos Correa. And that, I think, is probably the worst one, including Starlin Marte and Gregory Polanco not getting in and Odubel Herrera getting in. So a lot of, I think, things that Rob Manfred should consider. He should consider that we live in a day and age where bad teams shouldn't keep stars out of the All-Star game. And there really, you know, there once was a time when every team in baseball deserved to have an All-Star to call its own. But really that time was, you know, in the 50s and 60s, not right now. And last night when I heard the names being called out, it was just absolutely shocking to me that Carlos Correa, Aroldis Chapman, Starlin Marte, and Gregory Polanco are not in the All-Star game. They definitely deserve to be there. And I hope you do agree with me, and I hope you agree that Alex Colom, Eduardo Nunez, and Odubel Herrera do not deserve spots there. I'm happy for them. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but the All-Star game deserves better than that. I mean, it really does deserve better than that. And to me, what makes it – the All-Star game should not be about cramming a utility guy from a team, you know, like 27 games under 500 onto the roster only because somebody wearing that uniform has to be there. I just think that the All-Star game should not be about that. And I know people might disagree that every team should have a representative because it keeps baseball exciting, but when you're keeping stars out of the game, it's just not right to me. And it might be tough because it keeps everything exciting for every team if they're in the All-Star game. But if you're keeping stars that deservedly should be in the game, out of the game, then that's where things should be changed. All right, so that about does it for our show today. Thank you for tuning in. I will be back again Friday, I believe, 5:30 to 6:30 since the Pirates play at 7. And so I'll be watching the Pirates game tonight, 8:15. They'll be playing the Cardinals, going for their 7th straight win, looking to keep up the streak. Thank you for tuning in. Head over to our website, MLBinside.com, and I'll see you all on Friday.